Good morning. You have tuned in to The Morning Show here on 88.5 KRFY. It's your Thursday morning show, but without your usual Thursday co-hosts. Well, you got one of them. I'm Jack, and across from me is Julie, sitting in from... You're usually on Tuesday morning.
Yes, Julie. I am. Good morning, Jack.
Good morning. Nice to see you on a Thursday of all days.
I know. It's an unusual day for me.
It's a little weird. You sound a little stuffed up.
A little froggy.
Mm-hmm. We won't tell Jim. Hopefully he's not listening that you breathed on his microphone on a Thursday morning with whatever you're getting over right now. Hopefully not anything too serious.
No, hopefully not pertussis, the suspected illness. I'll spray. Don't worry. I'll spray it down when I leave.
Yeah. We were talking this morning, but I'm just now hearing how prominent it is in your voice, Julie. Yes, you sound a little different.
Happy to be here, though.
We have in the studio not Tim Behrens, but we do have Becky Rivak and Patricia Walker-White to talk about Tim Behrens' upcoming performance at the Panada, which is called My Favorite Toy Was Dirt. And, we'll be discussing that in just a minute. But first, of course, we got to start with the weather, don't we? As we usually do. It's sunny today. Winter finally arrived, Julie.
Well, it did, but I was like saying a couple weeks ago, entered the studio, Jack, that I feel spring in the air.
You did say that. It was very optimistic of you. It looks like spring because it's so sunny outside, but it's like this last 2 weeks we finally got, like, December. We're just running a little behind. Sunny today, high of 30 degrees, a little windy, but not too bad. Increasing clouds tonight down to 14 degrees. Snow showers tomorrow, an 80% chance of precipitation tomorrow, and it will be snow with a high of 28 degrees. Continuing on Friday night, a 40% chance of snow on Saturday with a high of 31 degrees. On Saturday night, a 30% chance of snow showers, a 30% chance of snow showers on Sunday. And looking ahead to next week, it's a high of 23 and a slight chance of snow showers on Monday. Basically, more of the same that we've been having for weeks now.
Sun and snow, we love it. And in honor of Chris Bessler, I will mention that tonight is the full moon. And for you full moon bike riders, get out there.
Is it in the actual ride is tonight as well?
It is.
Sometimes it's a little off, but I like that. Okay. Are you going to go? Have you ever been?
I haven't because I live outside of town and I haven't, but I want to.
Mm-hmm. I see it. I live in town. I've never actually participated in it, but I have seen it go by several times. And it's kind of spooky, actually, to see a huge bunch of lights rolling by silently on the, it's usually not that silent, but you know.
Sometimes silently and sometimes cha-ching, 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 mm-hmm. The bells, the bike bells.
Okay. Well, that's tonight. Julie, you're just recovering from a cold. Anything else going on? Anything interesting this weekend?
Well, Jack, there is one very interesting thing for me, and it's the, as you know, you've probably been to it, the Eichardt's Keg Pull event for doggies.
Oh, it's the, no, I have not been, but but I know what you're talking about. Well, time.
I'm excited this year because I'm planning to take my small chihuahua and compete.
I forget your dog's name. I'm sorry.
Dex.
I was going to say like Dixon. I was close. They did tie like a beer can or something behind it, right?
We've been training.
Like yeah.
Yes.
Okay. For the small dogs. That will be in the alley behind Eichardt's, I think, right?
Except that this year it's in the granary district. It's a change.
Oh,
this year.
Okay.
Yes. It's 9 a.m. everyone, if you want to see Dex.
At Matchwood.
Okay. All right. And you know, there's big dogs that pull kegs and small dogs that pull whatever they pull.
How about you, Jack? What's new? What's happening with you this weekend?
Nothing. I'm going to go down to Spokane and get my hair cut. I mean, those separate things. I'm not going to Spokane. Well, I might get my hair cut in Spokane, but I'm going to Spokane. Also, I'm getting a haircut. That's it.
Good.
Yep.
Except for those four things happening at the Panada that you're going to catch one of.
Right. Big deal. Big fun times at the Panada Theater. And let's talk to you guys about it. This is, the show is called My Favorite Toy Was Dirt. Okay.
Yes.
The actor slash, what exactly is Tim's role. It's like everything, right?
He calls himself the indentured actor for Patrick McManus, and he's actually performed Patrick McManus comedy since 1992. He's done it over 1,600 times, he says, to over a million people. So he's performed these as one-man shows the very first time, way before I come up here. He was in my performing arts season. And I walked out as this guy was setting up his props, and there was like roadkill on a piece of, you know, board. I was like, oh, this is going to be delightful. But he just mesmerized audiences, and I was stunned at how well he could capture the humor, and it was timeless. And Becky's read the books. So it was interesting. I had not read the books, nor do I remember my little brother reading them, but every little boy that come into those shows had had their books read to him by their dad. So it was kind of a family tradition as well. And as you know, or probably have heard, that Patrick McManus passed away a year ago. And he could have stopped performing, but there was one more little performance inside him. And that's where this one starts.
This is the, he died in April 2018.
Yes.
I think we looked it up.
Yes.
Okay. And he was a local, I mean, Patrick McManus is a nationally known, I grew up with him in, I grew up in Minnesota, and
that's
whole stack of his books over there.
Yes, that's what I've heard.
So he was a nationally known humorist and writer of short stories, columns, and eventually novels too.
Right, and that was for Field and Stream is where he started with the, you know, got published with a lot of his short story stuff. It was really cool, like Trish said, that one of the things that I grew up with was, you know, always looking for books with humor, and then I'd come across him. I couldn't even tell you at what point. And then when we got here, when I moved to Sandpoint, which was in 92, I think it was like the year we got here, or like maybe one or two after, and he was performing one of, you know, the first one he did. And so it was really interesting to see it on stage and so funny, you know, and we were just like going, this is great that they do this. Well, then, of course, I bought the books from my father, who, you know, has read all of them also. I basically gave him my collection for the most part. So,
but North Idaho has a claim to fame in the books.
What I found out later on as I was reading more is he would always talk about this, you know, playing on Sand Creek and this ditch and all this stuff. When I found out later that the property that I live on actually was the ditch that McManus played in with our neighbors. Our neighbors talk about when they were growing up. And so it was kind of all of that stuff all kind of came together. It was pretty cool. So
Tim Behrens has portrayed the characters of the books and had done this one-man show for all those years. But this is different. So just so folks know that this is a marriage of the books and music.
Right.
And so this is a composer that has come in and they had a word for it. They combined the script and the music. And what was that called, Becky?
They call it a scorped. So it's a score and a script combined. And they've decided that they've made up a new word that's going to be out there from now on, the scorped. Becomes something all on its own. One of the things that Tim really wanted to make sure is that we gave it the full title, which is what he's going to be performing this weekend is My Favorite Toy Was Dirt, An American Story in Concert. And Olivia Brownlee, who is the composer and will be one of the the artists, the musicians in it, Tim and Olivia have worked really hard for about a year and a half to really bring this together and make it work. Working with Patrick before he passed away and getting the okays as they went through the script, scorped, and then in the end they had to finish it, you know, obviously on their own. But I've heard some stuff from the first performance last week, and they said it's great. So, like always.
Yeah.
A host of musicians on the stage, and they described it as American folk, traditional jazz, Texas swing, American classic, cowboy barn dances, and other national musical forms. So
sounds like a McManus book.
Yeah, kind of sounds like a full combination there. A little something for everyone. And I think this weather maybe invites a few laughter, a little bit of laughter to be a perfect combination for this weekend.
Yeah. Have you guys seen it, read it, anything like that?
No.
You don't know what you, this will be your first time?
This will be our first time,
yeah.
too.
Yeah. No, I mean, he's explained it to me, you know, multiple times. And then I had someone I know has went and saw it in Spokane. And so I've got, you know, they just said it was a rollicking good time. Mm-hmm. Was the quote. I went, that's an okay quote.
Yes.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, it opened last weekend, or, I think, in Spokane. Is that right?
On the
15th in, one of those theaters in Spokane, and now we get it for the second week.
Mm-hmm.
Is this, do you know, is he going to call it after the, I mean, is he done with the McManus interpretation after this?
Man, Tim, I think Tim will go on and on as long as he can stand up and walk and do, you know, he plays up to 36 different characters in each one-man show that he does. So I don't think that those 36 people will leave him very quickly. So
I also think that this is a labor of love. He's always admired and respected. I think it was a mutual respect and admiration for each other. And so I think as a tribute and honor to Patrick McManus, he would continue for as long as he could just because of that. He's always had held him in high esteem. And Patrick McManus held him equally so.
And it seems as though he worked hard to get this together and get it on a stage. I noticed a Kickstarter campaign when I went online to research.
Yeah.
And he's kind of underfunded a lot of this. So I'd like to see this show be very successful just because, you know, he did do it out of a lot of heart and it did take a lot to put this together.
Yeah. So. Yeah. And one of the things that's a cool thing is McManus, when he was teaching at Eastern Washington, was Barron's teacher. And so he had taught, one of the things that I read that I didn't ask Tim personally if this was true or not, but one of the quotes was that after he got done doing one of his papers, he went and asked McManus about some problem he thought he was having. And he said, you know, really, I know that you act too. You might stick to being an actor. And then he said, well, if that's the case, then why don't you write me something? And so, as the story goes, McManus wrote his first play and for the one man play, and then gave it to Barron's, and that's where it supposedly all started.
None of us in this room are locals, which is too bad. I mean, we're all imports, more or less. Did you guys ever run across the person of Patrick McManus?
No.
Or no?
Mm-hmm.
No.
Nope.
He did some appearances down in the Boise-Nampa area for his books. So he would be at bookstores.
Yeah.
But it wasn't typically at the same time we'd be having Tim there performing, but almost like a precursor, he'd come around and do some book signings.
Mm-hmm.
So I did in a book signing.
Mm. Did you actually say hello?
Mm-hmm. I did.
Mm-hmm.
I did.
Did you tell a joke or anything like that?
He just probably was, you know, and he'd given a reading out of his book beforehand. And so it was kind of funny because I'd already watched him perform this when Patrick was reading, but so it was a contrast, but, you know, it was funny nonetheless. The guys just naturally come out.
I picked up a book as a signed copy. It was because it's easy to find up here.
Nice.
Or
yeah,
somewhat
up here,
easier
right?
to find.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I sent it to my grandmother, I think, for Christmas or her birthday or something like that.
Nice.
One of his later books. I can't remember which one.
And I hope that parents bring their children because it's totally family friendly humor. And it's nice for kids to see books come to life and characters come to life and get this timeless thing they share with their parent.
Yeah.
And
is this like a narrative? does it follow, you know, like a structure, a beginning, middle, end, or is it kind of more just storytelling?
It's like all the other one man's it does. It's a mesh, a compilation of specific stories out of all of his different books. I know that in here, in one of the many things that we've read and talked about with Tim, it's going to include The Night the Bear Ate Goomba, My First Deer, and Welcome to It. Those are three for sure that short set of stories that are going to be there.
Yeah.
So he's very funny, and adding music to it is going to be definitely interesting. So it'll be fun.
And of course, this is a show that's just coming to the Panada. There's no need for a director, a local director, of course. But you, Becky, you've directed at the Panada in the past.
Finished a show. Yeah.
So it's an interesting, probably interesting for you to be able to just enjoy it and not have to worry about all of the parts and pieces.
That's
happening.
For sure. Yeah. Yeah, whether or not they remember their lines or not.
Mm-hmm. That's right. And the Panada is getting so child-friendly lately, isn't it? That's a nice, it's nice to have.
We're trying to make sure there's something for everyone.
Kids
so that,
all the time.
Yeah. That's, when you think of the Panada for kids, a lot of times you think of just dance recitals or band performances. And it's one of the things that Patricia's been working towards is getting more, more family things going all the time and kids stuff. This summer we're going to be doing a youth program, which is just all acting for sixth grade to middle school, and that'll be going on all summer. So we've got we keep thinking up different things.
If we don't get these kids thinking about theater early, it just doesn't happen.
That was the exact words I was just about to say, is that getting them to engage in that theater, we need them to understand why. And we all just had this really sad reminder of what happens when our history goes. And I, my phone was blowing up the other day because people didn't know for sure what block that fire was in, and they were worried. And, it just brings it home about, you can't make something new old.
That's right.
And so we need that next generation coming up to care as much as we all do about that grand theater. And so it's really important for them to understand what all can happen on that stage.
Yeah. When that, just speaking of that, that's one of the things that actually Tim Barron said, is that he's been coming to the Panada, basically for 26 years, and he just couldn't not perform this new show here. Right. And he feels like this is the actual premiere by coming to Sandpoint, where, McManus, grew up. And so it was really nice that he felt that way when he was talking to us.
Let's talk about this premiere. What times and days for folks that are listening?
It is on the... I didn't write that part down.
Or online.
Tomorrow. Yeah, it's Friday and Sunday. I do know that part. And it's going to be at... the first performance is tomorrow night at 7:30. And then 3 o'clock on Sunday. Yes, Sunday.
7:30, you say?
7:30, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So a person could do keg pull and then head over for the play.
You bet.
That's perfect.
Absolutely. And that 3 o'clock is such a great time because, after driving the slick roads, you can come out and enjoy it. And it's a perfect one on Sunday if the weather's a constraint. And so good time at either show.
Mm-hmm. We have, for the first time, we have music from Olivia Brownlee, joining Tim Barron's. He sings, I'm guessing, or does he?
He talks, sings.
Uh-huh. Yeah, he's more talking. That's not so much singing, but
yeah,
she's, accomplished in her own right. She's been doing this for 20 years as a composer, and so she's quite the accomplished artist and has brought together a beautiful collection of artisans to perform with her. So listening to her performance is going to be just as much of a treat as the performance from Tim, I believe.
Mm-hmm. We have a quick little song by Olivia Brownlee that I'm going to play right now, and you can get a taste, I guess, of not exactly what's going to be coming up in the show, but at least Olivia Brownlee style. This one's called Don't Tell the Country. We're talking to Patricia Walker, the executive director of the Panada Theater, and Becky Rivak, the...
Managing event something.
I do. Event manager.
I do a little bit of everything.
Yeah. And talking about an upcoming performance this weekend on Friday and Sunday of My Favorite Toy Was Dirt, an American something.
American Story in Concert.
An American Story in Concert. I'm sorry to put you on the spot like that. Here's some music. That's Olivia Brownlee with Don't Tell the County. I said country, I think, but, you know, forgive me. We are here with Patricia Walker and Becky Rivak from the Panada Theater talking about Olivia's participation in a performance by Tim Behrens called My Favorite Toy Was Dirt, an American Story in Concert, coming up tomorrow at 7:30 p.m. on the 22nd and 3 o'clock and the 24th at the Panada Theater.
And I, you know, it's always, never ceases to amaze me the amount of talent that comes out of North Idaho. And I think it's nice to have bragging rights that when he talks about My Favorite Toy Was Dirt, Patrick McManus is talking about the dirt of North Idaho. So this show will go around the country, but he wanted to do a couple of performances to make sure it was solid and then premiere it here in Patrick McManus's home county, and then take it out on the road. So this is kind of a special little treat that we shouldn't take for granted and come support this art form, because it's a great one.
Yeah. One of the things I just wanted to add, you're talking about dirt. One of the cool things that happened, you mentioned the Kickstarter campaign that they did to be able to afford the musicians and all that stuff when they very first were setting it up. So in the Kickstarter, those who pledged over $100 were given a jar of dirt from McManus's fictional hometown of Blight, Idaho. And Tim said he actually did send out multiple jars of dirt. Yes. He said it was one of the, he didn't know how that would go over. He goes, but that was definitely a big yes for everybody. Yeah. So I thought that was a really clever little add-on to that.
And if what Becky mentioned off-air is true, some of McManus's original dirt may have been from our own Sand Creek.
That's right.
Absolutely. So, and, you know, Tim Behrens talked about it being dirt from North Idaho. So it definitely is our own home dirt.
That's right.
Got a few artists that call Sandpoint home and have treated the Panada well. We're lucky.
We are very lucky indeed.
What's going on Saturday? Anything?
So there's trying to wrap up some more Oscar nomination movies. So we've been showing Can You Ever Forgive Me? Because Melissa McCarthy has an Oscar nod. And crowds loved it the other night. They found her performance just, you know, they're used to seeing her in a comedy role. So watching her in this serious role was very different. We're showing A Star Is Born, which had multiple people in tears when they're leaving. Mm-hmm. So I guess that impact is still there. And then we have one that will air after the fact, and that is called Shoplifters, which is a foreign film contender. So, you know, it may or may not get the Oscar nod, but it was a seemed like an exceptional foreign film. So we're going to show that afterwards. We also, though, this Friday have the wildlife photography of Jerry Ferrara, who has, you know, had that photography shop on the corner of the Panada for quite some time. I'm not sure how long, because it's there since I got here. But he has amazing photography. And so you can only imagine what stories are behind those photographs. And you know, we were the kind of like one of the people checking to see if he would be interested in starting to tell those stories. And so Kinnick-Sue's bringing him for the first one. And they're going to do one, and then we're going to follow it up again when he went on his African adventure. So we're going to do another one, but this is the first one. And he's going to do it at 3 and 6. And the little theater has some limited seating, so you might want to get there early for those. But he's just fascinating to listen to, and his photography is spellbinding. So Those should be wonderful.
Yeah, and Kinigsu Land Trust has they're doing all their own ticket sales. We don't have any ticket sales at the Panada except at the door. But I would go to Kinigsu Land Trust, and if you're interested in going, and make sure you get a ticket, because like Patricia said, it is very limited seating.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have that Follies coming up, which there are no tickets, to my knowledge. There might be, unless there's some VIP ones left, but we certainly have sold out within the day.
Yeah.
But that is some points. Craziness for a good cause, I guess you would call it.
Mm-hmm.
So. It must sell out on the first day every year. It has every year since I've lived here.
It doesn't. Yeah. They don't last very long, that's for sure.
When they added that VIP seating, then I think some tickets took a little longer to sell, but the bulk are gone. Mm-hmm. And they just start getting them at midnight, I think, on the minute they open.
Yeah. That does sell out pretty quickly. That's on the... next weekend, I guess, right?
Yeah, it's the the first Friday, Saturday of March.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you, is that like a weekend off for you guys? Or do you you're there the whole time?
Oh, no. Mm-hmm. That's heavy duty.
Yeah. I think that's my weekend.
Yeah, nice try, Becky.
Good idea, Jack. I like that.
Nice try. That doesn't really work that way. When there's that many people in the building and that much going on, then we just have that much more to do, but. I mean, they take care of a lot of the things, so it is a little different for us, but it's good, you know, and it'll be interesting. Their theme this year is the Rat Pack, so I'm going to be kind of curious to see how some people interpreted that. I haven't decided if I should dress like Marilyn Monroe or, you know, Dean Martin, you know, the field's open, right?
Yeah.
That's right.
So. That's what's coming up at the Panada, and then after that. What? Shoplifters?
Shoplifters.
Yeah.
We have a couple of films that we have our eye on that we're trying to get in. And and so those will be announced as we get them confirmed.
Okay.
Those distributors, we like them.
Mm-hmm. And if there's something that, you know, shines higher than during the Oscars, we'll see what we can do to bring that in. But I'm still pulling for Green Book, but that's a personal favorite.
If something sweeps the Oscars or something like that, will you look at bringing it back again, even if you've already had it?
It's up to, it's up to a lot of different variables, especially the distributors. Mm-hmm. But the other part is like Roma, which was a Netflix thing. We just couldn't get a hold of it. I tried multiple distributors on trying to get a hold of it and that's never could. And that's the frustration.
Controversial because it wasn't a theatrical release. And you know, theaters, especially art house theaters, are already struggling against the people watching things at home on their computers and on their phones and all that. So to have a film come out that never had a theatrical release, it's very... daunting to us to see how that's
not
does.
Right. That's my theory, is it shouldn't be up for an Oscar if you can't see it in the theater. So, and that's my personal.
They did get some pressure, and so they released it to a few theaters. But, you know, typically we can't get something that's on Netflix that's not available to a theater. So,
got Julie here. I've got a question about your original works. How do you all work to decide what you're going to present next, and what's the planning like for that?
Are you talking about films that come in?
No, your productions, your plays.
Oh, well, how many now? Three. I've written three for the stage, and then what's nice about that is, you know, then we don't have to pay the royalties because I own it. Whereas, like when we did Drinking Habits by Tom Smith. And so we go through a company called PlayScripts, and then we pay them the royalties and all that. And then it's just literally sitting down with, there's probably a handful of us that get together and talk about what plays, you know, we think would do well. And really, we could do some serious stuff. There's some amazing, really heavy stuff, but there's enough heavy stuff happening, so I'm more of a comedy person anyway, so I tend to always go towards comedy or lighter attituded type of stuff.
Draws a light audience, and I would think that would be a good way to go.
Comedy was the the goal when we pick drinking habits. And so people loved having that during the Winter Carnival. That was our add to the Winter Carnival. So it was fun for us to present that. And people said it was the perfect thing for right now. So we'll put that into the hopper as well as maybe some more original works and then mix in. We'd love to do a musical, but the royalties are so much higher on those that that's still something we have to figure out how to fund. But
maybe Becky will be growing into musical.
Oh, she did a musical. It was phenomenal. Yeah. And yeah, so we did have to do another one.
We wrote Christmas Carol with an E on the end. And it was something I didn't really realize what I was getting myself into.
No, I'm not sure I'll talk her into it again, but
a lot of work, I'm sure. But much work.
If she's forgotten all that work part, I might.
Yeah, right. So fun though.
One more time, let's recap. We've got Tim Barron's coming up. He's probably not here yet, but he'll be here tomorrow.
Yes.
Yeah.
He wanted to come today, but the weather wasn't permitting him to get away early enough, so he sent us in his stead, and I've known him for so many years that we felt pretty comfortable coming in his place, but I'm sure that you need to come see him in person to really get the full flavor of my favorite toy was Dirt.
Yeah, especially Tim's quirky, funny, you know, he's great. So if you get a chance to come, really, it's going to be worth it. Tim Barron's never lets people down with his comedy.
Hopefully we'll be able to see him, and hopefully he'll come back, do some more of this, and come visit the radio station next time.
Yeah.
would have been nice to meet him. Yeah. We have waiting in the wings. We have Bob Over and an unknown student, I think, from the Sandpoint Leadership Academy. I'll look that up. More details to follow on who our next guest will be when they arrive in the studio. But right now, we're going to say good morning and goodbye to Becky and Patricia. Thanks for coming in, you guys.
Thanks for having us.
Have fun this weekend with the show. And we're going to play something that was at number one 25 years ago today. Mm. What do you think it was? Any guesses?
No.
1994. It's Celine Dion with The Power of Love.
Ooh, yeah. Would not have guessed that.
There we go. Yeah. I would not have guessed it.
This is at number one on the Billboard charts on this date 25 years ago today. Bob Over coming in just a few minutes. Stick around. This is The Morning Show on 88.5 KRFY. You are listening to The Morning Show on 88.5 KRFY. There's a little knob there, a volume knob to adjust your headset if you're listening. If you're listening here in studio on headphones, otherwise in your car, use the usual volume controls that you'll use to adjust the radio if you want to change the volume. This is The Morning Show on 88.5 KRFY. We just said good morning and goodbye to Becky Reback and Patricia Walker. In the studio now, Bob Over, the director of the Professional Nonprofit Leadership Program from the University of Idaho, and Joanna Quick, his assistant or the new assistant director and recent graduate of said program. Good morning to you both. Welcome to KRFY.
Thank you, and good morning to you as well.
Thank you. Good morning.
Bob, you've been in here before, I think last year or maybe the year before, but talking about the same thing. You've been doing this for a few years now.
Yeah, seven, actually.
Okay. And Joanna, this is your first time as a... last year was your first time participating?
Yes.
And now you are on staff?
Correct.
Cool. So what is it, Bob? You're the expert. What is the Professional Nonprofit Leadership Program?
The program was born out of a significant need in North Idaho for classes and for education and for support for our nonprofit sector. And this was designed along the line of let's build our community even to a greater extent than it's already being built. And so we service our community here. And you talked about outreach just a little bit before we went on air. And we reached down to Moscow and down to Wallace, up to Bonner's Ferry. We've had people come from Montana, and a lot of people come from Washington, because the program is unique. It's unduplicated. It's community-based. Our instructors are available even before, during, and after classes year-round. So we are very much entrenched in our neighborhoods here. In fact, I live here.
Yeah.
And it happens here.
It happens here. We're going to have a full-day seminar on May 5, and we're going to be doing it at 41 South, and we're going to be doing it in an area that is critical to everybody's needs, and that's going to be board development. And we're really pretty excited about that. It's going to be a full-day program, and we're going to address the major issues that people have asked us to talk about. And so it's that's what it is. We're going to be covering a lot of things, probably spending a lot of time on the relationship between the executive director or chief executive officer and the board. We're going to be talking about how to recruit volunteers, how to recruit board members, how to keep them active, involved, and excited. We're going to be talking about just a lot of considerations and problems that people are experiencing working with boards and boards working with staff. So it's going to address issues that people have asked for. And in fact, all the classes that we're doing this year are classes that have been asked for. And so that's what we're doing. And I'm really excited about this series that's coming up this spring. And we can't wait to get going. And as was mentioned earlier, we're going to be starting on March 14th and doing this series. And we have actually another full day of a seminar that we're doing, which is part of the series. And we're calling that the Beggar's Dream. And what that's all about is raising money, raising lots of dollars, and kind of by the numbers. And we're trying to make it fun and make it simple. And we're bringing in a couple people from our foundation sector here. Molly Sanchez is coming in from what used to be called the Inland Northwest Community Foundation. And Christy Meyer is coming in from the Vista Foundation. And they're going to be role-playing with students and telling them what they need to be doing to secure money from them. And as usually the case, our students leave with a commitment to send in a proposal for funding for their organizations. In fact, last year we had one student that interviewed with a foundation director and ended up with $35,000.
Oh, my.
So it's an interactive class that works for everybody.
Bob, it seems like you've chosen rich soil in which to teach this class. Do you have a general idea of how many nonprofits there are in our region?
Can I answer this one?
Yes.
I worked for a nonprofit this last year, so I got a very good idea. There's over 500 in Bonner and Boundary County. So there's about 350 of them that are service providers, which have a pretty solid board base. So you're looking at a market that is, you know, to keep that board structure, keep them lively, keep them engaged. And so there is a great need, and what is what drew me to the class was because I had just taken on a board myself last year for the first time. I worked the profit world for a long time, and getting into the nonprofit world, not as a total volunteer, but I was in AmeriCorps. So it was very enlightening to see that, you know, that base and that need for courses like this. So, and to see the enthusiasm and excitement that people have for the nonprofit world.
Yeah.
So. well, Sorry, Jack.
No, you go ahead.
I think that's maybe not an unusual story for folks that come to the area, to the Sandpoint community, and are often invited to join a board, but with little experience about it. So this course could be so helpful for boards and potential board members, yes?
Yes. And Julie, I want to suggest that board development is just one of a series of classes that we're doing. And if you'd like, I'll just run them down quickly and let people know where we are. We're starting our series this year, as I mentioned, March 14th, and it's starting with volunteerism. And volunteerism, I think, as we all realize, at least those who have worked in nonprofits, are the heart and soul of an organization. These are the people that come in and want to do good things, and the organization ends up profiting because they may not need to hire staff. The volunteers are probably more credible than the staff themselves because they are volunteering. They're integral to the inner workings of the organization. Then we're doing a thing on class on calling Ignite Your Mission through marketing. And that is another really, really important class in that marketing is essential and critical to an organization's sustainability and longevity. So we're going to be emphasizing that. We're also doing a class on special events, and that's a class that's going to be probably focused on mission-driven special events. In other words, events that relate to the organization's mission, and that will be really fun. We're going to be talking about different situations and different events. One we're going to be talking about is an event that happened in my former life in Colorado, where we did the event, and CNN picked it up and took it around the world. And I was getting calls from Japan and South Africa and everywhere else, on that, which was kind of fun. It was very unique and very different. We're going to talk about that. In fact, I've got a video on it that United Artists put together. So we're going to be talking about that as an example. Then we're going to be talking about how an organization can secure additional funds by starting businesses. So we're going to be talking about joint ventures within that organization itself. And that's going to be fun. That's going to be on April 11th. And then we've got a class that we're calling Foundational Concepts of the LGBTQ Experience. And it's a class that I think is really important and is integral to a person's understanding and appreciation of a nonprofit. And it's something that nonprofits are challenged with to put out there. And I know that in North Idaho, sometimes that can be a little bit dicey. But nonetheless, it's going to be important more at this time than ever before that I'm aware of. So we're going to be doing a class on that as well. And Julie Stratton is coming in for that, and she's the guru in that area.
Joanna, I noticed that behind a number of these classes in parentheses, there's advanced, intermediate. Tell us about that. Can anyone take the courses, or do we need previous training?
That's actually an answer for Bob. I believe that pretty much anyone can take these courses with the understanding of the content, right?
Yeah, and I think we explain the content through a syllabus, and people can go online to get that information and figure out if it works for them. And yes, it starts at intermediate and goes to advanced. The advanced generally are intermediate classes that have been enhanced. In other words, a class that may have happened last year has now been retooled with more and additional information, and that would be called advanced.
And the instructors are so knowledgeable and so personable and easy to talk to and ask questions. Bob has done a great job in picking those instructors and how they have integrated themselves in the community and with their audience. Because, I had never taken these courses before. Didn't even notice that probably some of them had that on there. But they were just really nice to, chat with. And you can chat with them afterwards, or they gave out their information. They opened the door. They invited you in, which is a huge plus.
Can I address the cost of this? This is, I call it dirt cheap. that's not the classes, that's the cost. And the reason they're so inexpensive, and that's probably a better word, is that most all of us are volunteers when we do this. Even though we have some of the best instructors that you would expect to really cost a lot of money, they volunteer because they're committed and giving back to our community here. And I think that's really good. So the cost of a single class, and the classes are on Thursday evenings for 2.5 hours, is $20. Mm. The full-day classes, if you take them alone, they're $75. And that's the board development and the fundraising class. But if you take the series of classes, which by far is the best deal, that's $125. And that includes one of the full-day classes plus five of the other classes. I did similar classes at Fort Lewis College down in Colorado, Durango. And this same series or close to it was $385. So, but the university has done a lot of in-kind stuff for us. The instructors have volunteered their time and their expertise. And so we're able to drive the cost way down. At the same time, the costs that are there are pretty much absorbed by the university. So it's kind of a, it's a deal that's really hard to pass up.
I'd say that's a heck of a deal. What's one college credit these days? I don't think you could get that for 1.25.
No.
Yeah, and we have credit students in that class too. They're continuing ed for the most part, but there are credit students in there that pay close to $1,000 for
and
this class.
And you get on the full day classes, you get a continental breakfast and a lunch.
Oh.
So and then yeah, very much take care of you.
I noticed that when you finish, you receive a certificate.
Yes, and that requires 50 hours of classroom time and participation. We have no tests. There aren't homework assignments unless somebody wants them. And if they want a homework assignment, I've got a pail full of them. So, we're also doing a online advanced nonprofit leadership program, and that's just for accredited students as well. And then they pay a lot of money for that. But the same content is in these classes we're talking about today for $125. So compare that to $1,000 and basically the same content. It's quite a deal.
You're in a nonprofit right now. KRFY Community Radio is, of course, Panhandle Community Radio. Yeah. And I'm listening to this thinking, yeah, we could use some of these skills, I think. There seems like there's something there to learn. How do we tell us again how we sign up, when it starts, and sign up's open right now, right?
It certainly is. I would go to the website, which is uidaho.edu/nonprofit-cda. And you can tab through that and get to the registration. And in fact, KRFY staff was in a retreat that we were involved in about 3 years ago. Mm-hmm. It was right here in Sandpoint.
Yeah,
and Susie and a number of other people came over, and we really appreciated that and got some good feedback on it. And
did you go to that one, Julie?
Was it at across the Long Bridge, 41 South, or was that a different one?
No, well, I think we've done two retreats. One was out at City Beach, and the other was over at 41 South and the lodge at Sandpoint.
I attended that one.
You did?
I did. It was great.
Well, super.
It's great. There's a testimonial.
Yeah.
Okay. Julie, keep the date of May 5 in
in mind. Your think bank.
Love to see you and your buddy over here, too, from Get Him Going.
That's right. I'll just add in, too, as someone deciding whether or not the value. Because it was my time driving down to Coeur d'Alene, you know, once a week. And then it was also, the full day class integrated with all the other responsibilities I had, my job. And so I looked at the value. And for that cost and the content that you got out of it, and after my director and I spoke and they ended up paying for that nonprofit I was working for ended up paying for my classes because I was just going to pay for them myself because I felt that the content was very valuable. Even being I've been a volunteer since I was 10. I've, worked and been employees of nonprofits, and I still felt there was, there's pieces that could still come into alignment, and these courses kind of brought that together for sure. And I always kind of look at, the cost evaluation is, I guess, the key there for sure. You know, and our, you know, I know our, all of our time is valuable, but if it's going to better the community and better the organization, in that too, we also rely on funds. And so if people are giving you money and they see that the efforts put in and stuff like that, it's definitely, you know, definitely writes it right there for you.
Yeah. You mentioned that it might be worth pointing out that you can have the, I mean, an organization could pay to send. Mm-hmm. You don't have to necessarily front this cost yourself if you are already involved in a nonprofit. Yeah.
Correct. Yeah.
We really encourage organizations to pay for their staff. And one of the problems that we have is that a lot of organizations are just not used to having programs like this or any other programs because there haven't been any, which makes us quite unique and different and I'd like to think special. So when an opportunity comes up of this nature, particularly when it's the quality that we're offering, organizations, I think, need to take a very close look at maybe readjusting their budget if they need to and sending their staff, because it's a morale builder, it's a skill builder, it's a community builder. And it all wrapped together, it really works, and we do get back to community building, and that's what we're really all about. We're doing that through the nonprofit sector, and we have many really wonderful nonprofits here in Sandpoint.
The classes are in Coeur d'Alene at the University of Idaho campus?
Yes, except for the May class, which will be down here.
Up here, yeah, okay.
And that'll be sponsored by Creations, and Sherry Meekings is very much involved in that. Keep that in your cell phone or on your calendar. That's going to be really, really fun.
Just curious, do you know, is there any kind of ride share or getting down there and coming back up? I imagine a lot of people in the Sandpoint area might be interested in going.
Yeah, we generally get from 4 to 6 or 7 people from Sandpoint every one of our series. And yes, a lot of them do ride share and come down, and some come down a little early, have dinner and come over to class, then ride back. And I need to figure out how to get involved in that myself, because I'm usually the last one there cleaning up and doing stuff, and everybody's gone. And I'm thinking, okay, I wish somebody would come back and get me.
Yeah.
So,
well, we've already gone over. We're a little short on time, but you said there's 500
over
500, 350 or so in the direct services area, which seems. I mean, I don't know. Seems high for a population base.
It does, and one thing that the organization that I was working for, one thing we noticed that a lot of them were similar type of nonprofits. So, you know, the Sandpoint Community Resource Center was kind of working with them to kind of collaborate together to say, okay, you have so many. How can we bring this all into one area? And that's why the Resource Center was started. So that's who I was working for. But we're also in a lower income state. So, because I come from Colorado, which is a higher income state, and I kind of did a comparison of nonprofits to there to here. And that need is there to support the community, whether it be healthcare, counseling, domestic violence, shelters. That need is unfortunately there. So that's why a lot of nonprofits are existing. And a lot of people want to give back to their community. So they filled out the form for a 501c3 and started a nonprofit. So they're random ones. Like, you know, you have the Avalanche, you know, group, or you have the Friends of Manikinik, Carousel of Smiles. They're just, you know, Creations, the Pondere Arts Council. You know, any of those sort of organizations. So
I think it's quite surprising that there are so many. Colorado has over 20,000. Idaho has about 5,000 nonprofits. And in fact, we have hosted probably close to 600 unduplicated students in 7 years. Now that's 600 people, that single people, unduplicated. So there is quite a group of nonprofits out there trying to do good things with a lot of people that need some support and help and education. So that's where we come in, and that's why the program has been so very popular. And yes. And I'm being a little prejudiced because I live in the Sandpoint area, and I want people, my neighbors, to come out and enjoy it. And I'm always available. I'm over at Evans Brothers Coffee. I'm across the street at the bridge and at Starbucks meeting with people all the time. So I'm available. So year-round, as many of our other instructors are, too, to help.
Yeah. Yes, our nonprofits make a huge difference in the community, and well-educated nonprofit folks make an even huger difference. Thank you.
You bet.
Thanks.
We thank you very, very much for this opportunity.
Yeah. Well, we'll see you again maybe before that May seminar, which will be up here or yes. something like that. Huh. We'll put something on the calendar.
That would be great.
I think we're going to have to call it a day here, Julie. No community events. There are, of course, plenty of things going on, but you'll have to go to Sandpoint Online to learn about that or go check out that Winter Carnival. Don't forget, it is the weekend, the only weekend where you can see My Favorite Toy Was Dirt, An American Story in concert, starring Tim Behrens, with music by Olivia Brownlee and a host of musicians on the stage with them. Thank you, Bob. Thank you, Joanna. And we'll say this is 88.5 KRFY Pondere. Stay tuned for Bird Note, Notto's Eclectic Mix, all day long after that. Good morning, everybody.